And welcome back once again for the Parish of the Patriots, and we're off to a bad start. Episode number 211. Whatever brought you here, I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a great discussion this week. It's always my goal. I don't have any idea what we're actually going to discuss, but I'm confident it's going to be great. If you're new here, we do have a Christian-specific segment that hits roughly around the halfway mark of the show. I encourage you to listen to it. Get something out of it. It'll be different. You'll enjoy it. I'm quite confident. This show is supported by you listeners. It's all free. There's nothing behind a paywall anywhere, anyhow. But if you do get something out of it, drop a little gift in the plate. We pass the plate around. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes if you want to be a part of that. And I encourage you to do so because it means a lot to me. Just simply go to the bottom of the description page for the show here on Radio Albion. You'll see we got snail mail. That's the easiest way. We got the Bitcoin, got a Monero address down there, got an email address for your notes. If you got another weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email with an address. Drop me an email. I can more than likely, I'll get spit out here in a minute, get you an address for that. So, yeah. In other words, I'll take your shit coins. I'm not too proud. Let's get into this week's listener supporter mailbag as we go barreling down the road once again for episode 211. GPD, here's something for the plate. That's from Mr. T. Thank you. Thank you. You didn't just... Remember when I... No, you probably don't remember. Y'all probably don't remember when I was a kid. You know, slugs. Do you know what slugs are? No, I'm not talking about shellless snails. Slugs, you got those electric boxes. I had friends that would do this. They were convinced they could do this. They'd get those electric boxes, like, you know, behind your outlets and stuff. And they're like metal. And they have those knockout things where the wires go in. And those things happen to be about the size of a quarter. And I had friends that they were just convinced if you ground those edges down and made it nice and smooth, you could drop that in the Coke machine because you buy a quarter, Coke for a quarter. Didn't work. Don't be dropping slugs in the plate. You know, don't be, when the plate goes by, you're just dropping slugs in there and acting like y'all dropping something in. You never know what we're going to talk about here. Thank you for not dropping slugs in the plate. It is appreciated. GPD, late boomer guy greetings. Do you think this country needs its ass kicked? And when will this clown world ever end? Pray for me. That's from Triangle Whip. Well, I'm going to tell you what. Things are extremely clownish. But they're not necessarily as bad as you may think they are. Take a moment and look about. Do these look like the actions of people that are really confident, like they have a plan? Because I don't see that. It is clownish. It is stupid. But it's also a sign of failing. I was reading in the... I always check the headlines before I record the show because... You know, like, I don't want to miss a really important topic. And, you know, huge protests in France. You're going to know this if you live in the U.S. because they won't ever tell you what's going on the rest of the world unless it fits the narrative. Huge protests going on in France over Macron wanting to raise his retirement age. You know, and that's the story. He's raising the retirement age a couple of years. Massive protests. So they're shutting down. They're shutting down. You're not allowed to protest in certain areas now because it's a threat to the public order. You know, the public, or in other words, that's them. They got to crack down. They're going to crack down. Can't have people part of it. Of course, you have to understand, you know, that's just the topic. You know, that's just the reason for the protest. There's a whole lot more going on. The inflation and all the rest of these social pressures are much worse in Europe than they are here in the U.S. People sit here and say, how come they're doing this over there and yet Americans aren't doing nothing? Well, because there's a lot more social pressure here. We still have, I've said for years, before things even got so clownish, I said, really, the only thing holding the U.S. together is a sense, a perception of economic prosperity. The perception, and I use the term perception because I don't think it's necessarily true. People look around, they say, yeah, you know, we've got stuff. You know, I've got stuff. I got some stuff. But what they have is debt. They don't actually have stuff. They're using the stuff, but it ain't theirs. You might have a really nice new car, and you might think, I'm doing pretty good. I got a nice new car. But it ain't yours. You're just using it. This is what I mean. Perception. If the U.S. was truly economic, if the people were truly prospering, they would own the car. They would go write a check for the car. But they don't. To borrow the money. But you see, it gives you that perception, that feeling like you're doing good. And as bad as things are getting, and things are going downhill, you see, Triangle Whip asked, does the country need its ass kicked? My answer is it's getting its ass kicked now. Clown World is getting its ass kicked now. That's why it's acting so clownish. As things continue to go downhill, as that begins to evaporate, everything, in other words, everything that's holding this together is that perception. Things are worse in Europe. The inflation is worse. They have energy shortages. People can't make a living. They're throwing old people out in the street so they can move migrants in. There's a lot more social pressure than here. Here, people still, by and large, have this sense, this feeling that they're doing better than everybody else in the world. Whether that sense of whether that's true or not, whether that's factual or not, is almost irrelevant. That's what people perceive. They look around and they think, well, I'm still doing pretty good. And that's what makes things keep rolling along. Even amongst all of this, that's the problem. We live in a materialistic society. You look at all of these ridiculous things, the wokeness, this promoting child trannyism in the elementary schools. And you think, you know, why aren't people just like going absolutely crazy? Because we live in a materialistic society. The people, quote unquote, the people have abandoned God. Okay, they chase money. So if they feel like they're doing okay money-wise, regardless of if that perception is correct or not, at the end of the day, they don't care if the school is going to make their kid a tranny because they don't want to do anything that will threaten their money. They could homeschool their kid, you see, but that would mean giving up some money. So they're gonna sit there and bitch at the school board meeting, and at the end of the day, send the kid for the rainbow class drag queen thing in the second grade or whatever the hell. Because hell, if mom had to stay home from work, we wouldn't have as much money. But there's the thing. It's a facade. It's a perception of relative economic prosperity. But at some point in time, that perception is going to come breaking down. And there ain't nothing else holding this country together. There's no shared religion. God's been abandoned. There's no racial cohesion. You don't have a shared kinship among the people. People are super atomized. One of the things that amazes me about this unhealthy urban lifestyle that they've pushed everybody into, you have people in closer proximity to one another than they've ever lived. And yet people are more isolated than they've ever been. And that doesn't make sense to people. They think, well, what do you mean? I live in the middle of the city. I'm surrounded by nothing but people. What do you mean I'm isolated? Do you know any of them? Do you know any of their names? When you pass the neighbor at your apartment going down the hall, do you stop and say, hey, how's it going? I heard, is your mama doing any better? Is she getting better? I heard she was sick. No, you don't make eye contact. Why? Because you're isolated. You got this little barrier around you. This is a bubble. You live in the city. You stop and try to talk to somebody. You're like, hey, how you doing? You're my neighbor. And they look at you like, what do you want? What do you want? Get away. You're trying to take my stuff. You don't have any stuff. You got your furniture from the rental center or some shit. What do you mean, get your stuff? Everybody in this country think you're trying to get this stuff. You're after my good errands rental center. My rent-a-center or whatever the hell. Rent-to-own furniture. That's the only reason you'd say hi to me. You want something. So, I mean, people live in these urban settings and they got more people around them ever. Damn sure more than is healthy. And they're more isolated than ever. Because they don't know any of these people. They don't want to know any of these people. They don't want to interact with any of these people. Live in a multi-ethnic society, multicultural society. And instead of promoting trying to keep people getting along as much, keeping a lid on that, you know, minimizing the natural frictions that are going to arise from that, you got the Clown World government that constantly agitates that. Where in a lot of ways, it's clownish because in a lot of ways, that's a good thing because it means these people are incompetent. These people that are running this program are not very smart. They're incompetent. They should be like playing all of that down, but they do the opposite. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about? Oh, yeah, in France. In France, they're having these protests and the police are busting heads, the usual stuff that we have in a democracy. You can't protest your government in the democracy because that disrupts the public order. In other words, threatens the government. And you're probably going to see a, you're basically seeing now and probably going to continue to see a repeat of the Canadian model. And you see, they think this is winning, and I see it as them losing. I do. Well, like, you look at what the Canadian model, what the Canadians did with the Canadian government, not the Canadian people, what the Canadian government did with the trucker protest. And it's short-sighted. They looked at that and they said, we won. You know, these people went and parked their trucks and protested what we were doing. And we showed them who's boss. We kicked their ass, ruined their lives, threw them in jail, and shut it down and cleared them out. We won. I see that as losing because what else did they do in doing that? What else did they? This is what I'm saying. The clown world is not. Reason a lot of this is so clownish. There's multiple reasons, but one of the reasons is because the people running this are actually very incompetent. They think they're smart, but they're incompetent. They look at this, the people running Canada, they look at this and they say, that's the way you handle that. These people went in there, shut everything down, parking their trucks, this, that, or the other, protesting. And we went in there and kicked their asses out, shut their bank accounts down. Anybody that supported it, shut their bank accounts down, put people in prison, and made an example of them. They'll think twice before doing it, and they're correct. They will think twice. Because what you taught those people is that peaceful protest doesn't work. That's the thing they miss. That is the incompetency here. You know, the competent way for them to have handled that would have been to make some window dressing concessions and to go out there and say, yeah, so we hear your voice and we're gonna do some concessions here. That would have been the competent way to work around that, but they didn't. Because they did this ham-fisted method. And all that did was teach the people that peaceful protest doesn't work. I mean, you hear people here, you know, in the U.S. And they'll be like, we need to be out on these streets. We need to be on these streets and letting them know. Trust me, they know. Okay? After both Charlottesville and January 6th, you should have that message in your head now. They know. Okay? They ain't no point in going out there. They don't care. Okay? They know you don't like it. They don't give a shit. You're just going to get on a watch list. Change your mindset. You know, going out there and yelling and waving signs around, look, that don't work. It's been tried. You're not going to do it differently, and this time they're going to listen to you. What do you think? Why should you beat your head doing something that doesn't work? Change your mindset. Quit participating. Quit acknowledging their legitimacy. Yes, you've got to pay your taxes, but when you do so, realize that it's a ransom. And I'm talking about your own mindset. You know, the only reason you're paying your taxes is because they will put you in jail. They will threaten you with guns if you don't do so. You're not doing it because you support them. And you have to have that acknowledgement in your head. When the people, by and large, when the government loses legitimacy, people quit. People rebel in little ways. But you have to understand, you're talking millions of people doing little violations all the time that they can get away with. And the whole system continues to break down. What's your mindset? Do you have a mindset of... Here's a good example. You're driving your car. This is a good gauge of your mindset, of how submissive you are in your mindset, how what legitimacy the system and the dictates have. You're driving your car at 2 o'clock in the morning. You roll up to an intersection and the light is red and you stop at that light and it's 2 a.m. and you look around and there ain't another car on the road. Do you sit there for the next however many minutes obediently staring at the red light? Or do you look around and say, well, there ain't nobody coming. This is stupid. And I'm just going to go. What do you do? Do you sit there obediently? There's not another car on the road. I can see clearly every which direction. It's a bit easy intersection in the middle of the day. Well, it's 2 a.m, but I'm going to sit here and obediently stare at the light because the light says I can't go. Yes. Remove yourself mentally from the legitimacy of this. You heard those people, what they call themselves, the sovereign citizens. They're an extreme example. I'm not saying be those guys. They're weird, you know. I mean, you're like, because it's detached from reality. You see these deals and they get like stopped by the police. I'm going to have one of these people now seeing me email being like, you don't understand. Don't spurg me, bruh. But you see these deals and they get stopped by the police and they're filming it and they're like telling the cops, like, I need to see your driver's license. I don't have a driver's license. What do you mean you ain't got no driver's license? I don't have to have, I don't recognize having to have a driver's license. I am a sovereign citizen. I don't operate under the rules of your stupid government. That's not what we're talking about. The reality is you're going to have the driver's license. But the system, you shouldn't be bought into the system. Not voting. The only way I'm voting is if they ever actually put Texas on the ballot. And even then, I know it won't count. But then I'll vote. But it's never going to get on the ballot. So it's a moot point. I'm not going to vote in their fake-ass elections and pretend it's real. You see all these people and they're talking about, I'm voting Trump 2024. We're going to show them this time. The same people have been talking like for the last however many years about how the election was ripoff and a fraud and stolen. It's a fraudulent election. What are you going to do? I've got to vote harder. It seems silly, but it's because they're still buying into the legitimacy of the system. They're still buying in. If I just vote harder this time, they totally won't steal it. Talking about Trump, I saw this deal the other day and he was doing a campaign speech or whatever. And he was talking about, you know, when I'm reelected and I go up there in 2024, I'm going to get rid of all of these globalists, these globalists at the State Department. I'm going to drain the swamp and all of this. And it's like, bruh, look, you was in there you had 4 years and you didn't do none of that. Now, how are you saying you're going to do it this time? You better have some kind of plan. What's your plan? How the hell are you even going to get elected? They stole the last one. Quit buying into it. Quit buying into the system. Yeah, I've been around. I've been around for a minute. I've been around for a while. And a lot of you are younger than me. And you know, you don't realize how much things have changed. I talk about this a lot. Probably so much that y'all tired of hearing about it. But too bad, because I'm going to talk about it some more. I see things, not just the way things operate or the way we view the country or any of this stuff, but how things have changed. I said here a while back, I was talking about like when I was young and in school, you know, there was like one or two fat people and that's it. Everybody else looked normal. And now it's fat people everywhere. People that look like something out of a circus freak show walking around, everyday occurrence. And that's not the only thing. Autists. Where does all this autism come from? I'm not dogging on autists. I probably have a significant number of autists that listen to this show. I'm not dogging on autists. I'm not even claiming that ain't real. I'm saying, where did it come from? Because I'm going to tell you, when I was young, we didn't have any autistic kids in school. When I was a kid going in school, we'd never even heard of that. What is that? And yet we have it now, and I'm not saying it ain't real. I'm saying it is real. Why is it happening? And why isn't anybody remotely curious as to why it's happening? You can throw theories. I don't have any way to do the research. And nobody else is trying to do the research. They're getting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to research something like, you know, can we recreate a woolly mammoth? Or the mating practices of single-cell amoebas. I know they don't have mating practices. I'm just saying. They spend all of this money talking about studying global climate change, which is a total fraud, a total hoax. We all know it's a hoax. Anybody with any two brain cells knows it's fake. But they spend millions of dollars studying this fake thing. But we know autism is real. Where did it come from? It's important because it came from somewhere. It didn't just simply always exist. Because I'm telling you, I've been around. It didn't exist when I was a kid. Not in the numbers that we have now. And we got it now. We have these autists. Why? It's important because these people have been victimized by something. They have this condition. They live with this mental state for a reason. I think we ought to know what that reason is. Like I say, we can throw theories out. One of which I could just off the top of my head, it's like, well, now we live in a culture where women stay on birth control from about the time they're 14 years old. And then when they're like 35, they decide to go off of that birth control and start trying to have pregnancy at 35, their first baby at 35. They done been on the pill for 20 years, altering their hormones, chemically sterilizing themselves. And then they go off of that. And then at 35, try to have their first child. That could be a reason why we have all these autistic people. Again, I ain't dogging on autists. Ain't their fault. I'm saying, why is it happening? Why aren't we studying this? You see all of the billboards about raising awareness for autism. How about instead of trying to grift money for a vague thing like raising awareness, how about some money to study out why the hell is this happening to these people in the first place? Why did they have to be born with this condition and try to manage their lives with this condition? It seems like that would be something worthwhile of studying, but that you notice there isn't any interest, is there? There ain't any interest. They want to find out. That tells you they already know. Somewhere, somebody, deep down in some files, they know why. They're just not going to tell you. And so they try to just act like, oh, this is a normal thing. We've always had this. Now, I'm not saying there's never been autistic people before modern, you know, last 30 years, whatever you want to say. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying not on the level we have now. Obviously, something's going on with this. What could it be? I seems something more worthy of studying than the latest rendition of we're all going to be underwater because the ice is melting because of global warming in the next however many years. It never comes true. Seems like, you know, there's real things we could study. Just like, there's real science that should be studied that won't be. You know, there's real things that should be pursued and they won't be. Instead, they spend all this, throw all this money around to pursue these narratives, to promote these narratives. I tell you, I saw something stupid the other day. I see a lot of stupid things because we live in stupid clown world. One of the most ridiculous things I see, I saw this thing the other day. It was this mainstream media guy and he was interviewing a government official. Now that in and of itself is nothing new. But they were doing it in the context of his podcast. This guy's on TV. And he got a podcast. He got a pod on his podcast of after the whatever. I don't know whatever the hell they call it. I just caught a little blurb of it. And like, I'm listening to it. I found that to be one of the most laughable, ludicrous things in the world. Like, if you had a choice of what media to be on, you know, people like me, we have a podcast because that's all we got. If you put me on TV, I may have a face made for radio, but I'm going to tell you what, if you put me on TV and just turn me loose, can you imagine that? Can you imagine a 1-hour show of Parish of the Patriots right here? It wouldn't matter if you put me on at 2:00 in the morning. There would be a hit. Imagine a show. Put me on for an hour. We get to reach all kinds of people. We do a podcast because that's all we got. They won't let us on the TV. They ain't going to let us on the radio. They ain't going to let us write articles for their mainstream newspaper. So we do podcasts. And people got to find them. People got to talk to other people and be like, man, I want to listen to somebody that's entertaining. entertaining, sort of, funny, kind of makes coherent sense once in a while. And has a Christian-specific message at some point in time. And somebody says, you know what? I got just a show for you. Go over to Radio Albion and tune into the Parish of the Patriots. That's how we work. We don't advertise. We can't advertise. We can't be on anything. So we down here in podcast land. And you got some media asshole that goes on TV every week, multiple times a week. Broadcasting to the masses, and that he's got a podcast on his pod. What's he gonna say on no damn podcast that he ain't gonna say any other time? There's some breaking news on his podcast. It just goes to show the level of their paranoia. You know, they're scared to death that, you know, like, there's something magical about the podcast format. They're looking around, they're going, we did a study. We did a study and we found out that all of this number of people are listening to podcasts. And their conclusion is there must be something magically good about the podcast format. We don't want to miss out on that. Ain't nobody listen to podcasts because it's a great format. They listen to podcasts because that's the only place they can find maybe some entertainment, some, maybe some relevant information, maybe something that helps them out, maybe something that means something to them, some actual unfiltered commentary. They ain't doing it because podcasts are so awesome. They's apparent, and you know, all the podcasts put together, you know, it's still a small segment, you know. Well, they got these big podcasters that get deals and stuff, and they claim they got a big audience share. Yeah, I don't care, whatever, good on them. But by and large, for the vast majority of people that are podcasting, you know, we have this fragment of a segment compared to what people on TV are reaching. And I just find it funny. I find it funny when some mainstream TV asshole is he has a podcast too. And all of them do, a bunch of them do. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that. Oh, be sure and catch his After Hours podcast. Well, what, is he go unplugged? What's he going to talk about? I ain't listening because I know what he's going to talk about. He's a ticket taker. He's going to talk about the same shit he does on TV. But you got to listen to it. You got to listen to it on a podcast. That's why this show has to be entertaining and fun. You know, we talk about the truth. We have fun. We have a Christian-specific message. But still, it can't be drudgery. It's got to be entertaining because you got to download it or listen to it on the Radio Albion page or whatever. You know, it takes a little bit of effort. This is not just, oh, it's 8 o'clock, turn on your TV. It's got to be entertaining. People go the trouble. Listen to podcasts. Ain't nobody going to do that to listen to some mainstream TV guy doing the same crap he does on TV because you might have missed it when he was on TV. You wanted to hear this guy's opinion. You could have turned on TV at any time. But no, you're attached to that ridiculous podcast format. I can laugh because you know what? I mean, I'm not saying some mainstream media TV guy doesn't have an audience at all on his podcast. I suspect he probably really doesn't. But regardless, I say this. The audience I have here, the Parish of the Patriots, y'all sought this show out. Y'all come to this for a reason, whether it's Christian-specific message, whether it's just because my ramblings are kind of funny and you wait to see if I lose my train of thought and just wander off into who knows what else. You know, we laugh, we talk about serious things, but at the same time, we keep our sense of humor. We do all of these things. But at the bottom line is y'all seek this show out. For whatever motivates you, you seek this show out, you tune in, you download it and listen to it when you're working, doing your gardening, barbecuing, whatever y'all doing. You know, and nobody's going to do that for mainstream TV guy who has a podcast. This is just a joke. It's a joke. And I am. I think that's something, you know, that makes it real. Whatever audience they have is just carryover. It's like they really listen to this guy repeat the same mainstream narrative over and over on TV. They just can't get enough. NPC has to have more input. So they listen to his podcast. Ain't nobody seeking it out because there's something fun about it. And y'all seek this show out. Yeah, you do. You have to look for this show. And whatever brought you to this show, and hopefully you keep coming back. I am proud of that, and I'm grateful for all of y'all. I really am. Because we don't have mainstream TV exposure. We got y'all. And I think it means something more about the audience. You know, you just bodies out there. You seek out the show. You join the show. You're a member of the congregation for a reason, whatever that reason is. I'm glad you're here. And speaking of which, we got to get into this week's Christian specific segment. So, you know, as I said earlier, if you're new, don't just tune out yet. I think you might get something out of it. If not, you know, really, I don't care. But hopefully you might want to stick around. But regardless, y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots.
In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 23, Paul writes, "But foolish and unlearned questions avoid, knowing that they do gender strifes." With that verse, I think we should ponder this week the question, is there a wrong way to go about speaking the truth, preaching the truth, teaching the truth? Is there a wrong way to go about it? I believe the answer is yes. I believe, in fact, that if we go about the truth in the incorrect manner, our motivations get twisted up and we kind of lose the entire point, and it can actually become self-harmful to us. And so just stick with me. I've got this, and I've got something kind of related. I don't know if I'll be able to put the two together. We're going to try it. It's going to be good stuff if we can. If not, I'll probably get into this other next week. But, you know, of course, as Christian believers, I believe, you know, one of the central tenets to that is the truth, which is, of course, Christ himself. But, you know, how we go about the truth. I mean, we seek the truth, we love the truth, we hate the world and its lies. But is there an incorrect way to go about speaking the truth? And again, I do believe the answer to that is yes. And it's a trap that we need not fall into, because we always have an example. We have the example of Jesus Christ himself. Now, we always come back to, as Christian believers, I mean, that first word in that first part of that word Christian is Christ. That is our example. That is who we emulate. That is, if we look at our lives to self-evaluate, okay, how are we doing with this? You know, what are we doing? Are we doing this right? Are we doing this wrong? Do we have something incorrect? Are we doing it correctly? I mean, we always have that measuring stick to go by. We look at Christ and it's like, how well is the way I'm going about this? How well is it lining up with what Jesus did, how Jesus went about things? And I think it's real easy to get off track from that. When you look at the way Jesus preached, and I always find this amazing, because he didn't go about like trying to create a big following. I mean, he didn't. Sometimes he had a big following. He had thousands of people that would show up and listen to him. And you have to realize at that time, I mean, that was a huge crowd. When you read in the Bible about cities, I mean, they're not cities like these urban monstrosities we have now. I mean, it was just a collection of people. By our terms, they wouldn't be called cities at all. So when he managed to gather up thousands of people, it was an enormous amount of people at that time. People were much more spread out. Obviously, it was agrarian society. People were living, you know, growing crops, you know, tending flocks, you know, livestock management, things such as that. They weren't living in an urbanized environment. People were spread out and living off of the land. So to gather thousands of people was an amazing thing. And sometimes he did that. And oftentimes then they would go away and they would be mad at him and they'd be like, well, we can't follow this teaching. This is hard and we're leaving. And he's down to his 12 dudes again. And out of the 12 dudes, one of them's a traitor. He did never go about trying to create this huge following. When you look at the way that Jesus taught and preached, he would hit a town. He would get a group, you know, people would start hearing him. He would go into the places where people would gather up to hear these things, and he would start talking. And sometimes they would go, wow, that's amazing. And sometimes they would be like, this guy's crazy. Now, some of the people that showed up, they were just there for the show. You know, they just wanted to see, you know, they heard this guy can come in and make the blind see and heal the lame and the cripples. And, you know, it was just like entertainment. And they really weren't even there for the message. But the constant in the way Jesus taught and the way Jesus spoke the truth is there's not a single instance in the Bible where Jesus repeatedly goes back to convince them. And I think this is an important, really, really important measure for us to keep in mind, because I do. I see a lot of Christian believers. I hear from a lot of Christian believers, and I think we lose sight of that. And I think people lose sight of that, and it actually becomes more harmful than you may think it is. And we'll get to that here in just a minute. Jesus would go and he would speak the truth. If he went into a town and nobody wanted to hear it, he just kept moving. You'll never see an instance where Jesus spoke the truth to somebody and they said, no, you're wrong.
and then he began arguing with them. And then the next day he went and sought that person out and argued with them again. And then the day after and the day after, and we said he would never get anything done. Jesus simply spoke the truth, and if they accepted it, so be it. If they didn't, he was moving on. He was moving on to the next place. Again, Christ serves as our metric, our standard. We look at Christ and we say, how well are we measuring up? Are we doing it in that way? Time and time again, I've seen Christian believers who will get into an argument, somebody, usually friends or family, and, you know, a discussion, and, you know, it's a disagreement, and they will keep going back to that over and over. Every time the family gets together, they have to have this argument again and again. If we look at the example of Christ, is that what he did? If you ask them and you say, why do you keep arguing with these people? They say, well, I'm speaking the truth, aren't I? I'm supposed to be speaking the truth. That's what I'm doing. See, I'm supposed to be doing that. But that's not the way Jesus did it. And that shouldn't be the way, I believe that shouldn't be the way we do it. You speak the truth. If somebody asks you and they say, hey, you know, I'm doing this, that, or the other. I've got this, that, or the other going on in my life. I observe this, that, or the other dynamic in my family. What do you think about it? You say, I've lived long enough that I've, this is a personal note, I know. I've lived long enough that I've had so many times in my life where people ask me what I think, you know, I will tell people what I think for them to just blow that off and go on and do what they're going to do anyway, that I really don't even like telling people. I generally try to avoid telling people what I think, without being asked at all, because I've learned that people are going to go on and do whatever they're going to do. You could call me jaded. I call it experience. But if somebody does ask you, what do you think? I'm thinking this, that, or the other. I should go do this, that, or the other. What do you think? And you tell them what you think. I've got a news flash for you. At the end of the day, even if you spend an hour discussing with them what your opinion is and why you think that way and why you believe that way, and whether or not they agree with you, because it doesn't matter, they might disagree with you and argue with you, or they may sit there and enthusiastically nod their head and say, you're absolutely right. That's right. That's right. Yes. Thank you for telling me that. Don't be shocked when the next week you find out they went off and did whatever the hell they were going to do in the first place. That's what people do. They might sit there and say, you're right. You sure are right. Man, I sure am glad I asked you. You know what they're talking about. I don't know what I'd have done if I hadn't asked you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, man, you're so smart. You're the greatest thing in the world. And then like a couple weeks later, you're like, you find out they did the opposite because that's what they were going to do in the first place. I hate wasting my breath. I do. I hate wasting my time. You get to go do what you're going to do. When God told the prophets to go out and speak to the people, he would tell them, sometimes he would tell them, look, they're not going to listen to you. I'm going to have you go and tell them A, B, and C. And they're going to blow you off and do whatever they're going to want to do anyway. And the prophets will be like, why do I got to do that, God? You're wasting my time. Because then the guilt isn't on you. You see, if when they reach judgment, the final judgment, the real judgment, they're not going to be able to have the excuse of nobody told me. They're not going to be able to, they're going to face the absolute truth and they're going to try to have the justification. Well, no one told me. You just got to tell them the truth. God, you'll know that God never told the prophets, you have to convince them or you're in trouble. You have got to convince them to do it. Otherwise, this is all on you. That's not ever what he told them. He said, you're going to have to tell them so that they can't say no one warned us. You got to tell them. But that ends. That's it. That's the end of your responsibility. As Christian believers, we need to get that mindset of the prophets. It's not your responsibility to make them understand. Your responsibility stops at you told them. What they do with the there's the information. What you do with it is all on you. You know, that needs to be your attitude. There's the information. Do what you will with it. But don't get upset because I'm here to tell you that 99.999% of the time, whether they sit there and agree with you to your face or sit there and argue with you to your face, at the end of the day, they're going to go off and do whatever the hell they want to. just the way people are. Time and time again, Christian believers go back. Just keep going back. Did Jesus do that? Trust me. I have read this. I'm holding the Bible up. I have read this. I'm holding it up like y'all can see what I'm doing. I have read this time and time again. And you're not going to find any instances where Jesus stayed in a town for 3 months and every day went back to convince his one guy to agree with him. It's not what he did. He spoke the truth. His same example is with the prophets. Went in, spoke the truth. They either went with it or they didn't, and he was moving on to the next thing. I just read this verse about avoiding these foolish and unlearned questions that just cause strife. You see, people get mixed up and they argue on stuff that really doesn't even matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't even matter. And yet people expend all of this energy on a foolish question that doesn't even matter. Speak the truth, and then your responsibility is done. Move on. You're not responsible. You're never given the job to make them believe. Trust me, people have free will. You have free will. They have free will. It's their job. It's all on them. They just, if you've spoken the truth on a topic, on a matter, then move on because your responsibility is done. Now, the downfall in this, when you start going back, when people get into this thing, it's like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to make them. You see, then the truth, then it's no longer truth-centric. What do I mean? The truth is no longer the reason. I mean, people tell you they're doing that because, well, I'm speaking the truth, but are they really? Jesus never went back to try to force anybody to agree with him. He just spoke the truth and moved on. The prophets were told plainly, your job is to tell them, not to make them agree with you. And yet people will go back and go back and argue and try to get people. Why? Because see, now you're falling in. Now, that has nothing to do with the truth. You can sit there and say, but I'm speaking the truth. But that's beside the point. Because the truth isn't the reason why you're going back and trying to convince them. Now you have fallen into sinful pride. Pride is another term, and we don't have time to really delve into it today, but private is another one of those words and terms that people don't understand anymore. You know, and this falls on the responsibility of the MCC, for once again, the church is lost. It's long lost the plot, unfortunately. Pride is one of those other things that people don't understand. They think, like if you accomplish something and you have pride in that's somehow sinful, but that's not. That's learning, and you accomplish something, and that's a feeling, a sense of accomplishment. What we're talking about here is actual biblical sinful pride. Because you see, you say you're doing it for the truth. You say you're going back to the well again and again to beat this person over the head with your point. And the reason you're doing that is for the truth, but you see, that's a lie. The real reason is you want them to say that you are right. You want them to agree with you, which means they need to come up. All of these different failings, all these different types of sin, they all are intertwined. We're going to see that here in a minute. You want them to come and say, you know what? I was wrong. And you were right. You want them to humble themselves before you and essentially bow before you. And you can see where this is intertwined with idolatry. This is sinful pride. Because when you go back over and over and over to try to make them agree with you, you're no longer doing it for the truth. You're no longer doing it because you think the Bible wants you to. You just want them to say that you're right and they're wrong. This is about you. It no longer has anything to do with the truth. It no longer has anything to do with the subject matter at hand. Again, we don't ever see Jesus doing this, ever. And yet, people will do this over and over. They go back. Go back. Gotta make them agree with me. Gotta make them. Regardless of what the subject matter is. Regardless of what the subject matter is, they're going to force him force them to believe. And of course, if the truth is the center of this, here's a little spoiler alert here. Here's a life hack for you, as it were. If the truth is centered here, the going back and beating them over the head is the least efficient method to make that happen. The Jesus method of telling them the truth and then moving on from that and not beating that to death is the most effective method. Because sometimes what will happen, and this is the way it goes, people will sit there and it'll soak in, and their first reaction might be to be like, no, you're wrong. But then as a little time and experience goes by, they start softening and they start seeing the truth in those words that you said. And it sits in the back of their mind, and they go along and they contemplate in their back of their mind, and they think about it, and they go along. And then you know what? One day they go, it just occurred to me that what I need to be doing is this. Now, this happens to be what you told them 6 months ago, a year ago, whatever the case. But you see, they're going to be like, I came to this grand conclusion on my own. You see, you ain't going to get no credit for it. You shouldn't care. You see, if the truth is your focus and not self-sinful pride, you don't care that you're not getting credit. When you see that person 2 years later and you're like, hey, you're looking good. You look like you turned your life around. What's going on? He's like, well, I realized what I need to do is it. And you're sitting there thinking, yeah, I told your dumbass that 2 years ago. They ain't even going to mention that because they don't even remember that. They think it was their own idea. They think they came to that all on their own. But you know what? You shouldn't care. You don't care if you're getting credit. Trust me, you're getting credit with God. You're getting credit with God. You shouldn't care. You shouldn't be like, hey, wait. I was the one that told you that. Now you're back to making them agree with you. See, that method is the most effective. When you just go back and try to beat them over the head and browbeat them and finally get them to somehow acknowledge that you're right and they're wrong. That makes them less likely to agree with you. And again, when this happens, the truth isn't even secondary. The truth really isn't even on the table. Regardless of what the subject matter is, the heart of the issue isn't the truth. The heart of the issue is your own sinful pride. Again, these things aren't that hard. We have a metric that we can measure ourselves against when we look at Christ and how he went about it. If we're doing what amounts to the opposite of what Jesus is doing, we're doing it wrong. We haven't. Look, you're not going to figure out a more clever way to go about things than Jesus. You're really not. You're not going to. Now, see, it may be difficult. And to see, this reveals some of the things we have to work on. You know, if that is a really difficult thing because you really, really want to make people say you're right, then sinful pride is something you've got to overcome. And see, if you're lucky in your life, no, I'm not even going to say that because I was going to be cracking jokes there. But look, it's sinful pride. You got to overcome that. If really you look and you self-reflect and you say, really, what's at the heart of the matter is I just want them to say I'm right and they're wrong. Then the truth's not your focus. And you know what you got to work on. That's fine. As long as you're alive, living and breathing, walking on the face of this earth, that's why you're here, to figure these things out and to work on them and to work on doing better. And you know what? If you can do that, it's going to free you. Because right now you're being held captive to this thing that you're going to somehow make other people do what you want them to do, in this case, to agree with you, to say that you are right and they are wrong. When you get to the point to where you're freed from that, you find out you've just relieved yourself of a lot of stress, a lot of unnecessary headache, because you no longer you can't control people. You can't make them agree with you. You can't make them do anything. You know, maybe you can't. And all of a sudden, you'll find that very freeing. You know, if somebody says, hey, what do you think? And you tell them, and you really kind of don't give a shit what they do with it. Now I'm talking about myself. You don't care what they do with the information, because they're probably going to just do whatever they want to do anyway. You'll find that freeing. That's much more liberating than sitting there feeling like you somehow have a personal responsibility to force them to agree with you when you don't. And mostly you just want to do that because of your own sinful pride. Now, talk about that. I'm looking at time. I think I got time to get into this. We may wind up running long. I may regret it, but we're going to get into it. Because it's kind of related, but it's kind of not. And that is something to remember, because we're walking in this world. Things are difficult. And you have to realize, here's an important thing to remember, because this is the way the devil tricks you.
we are kind of changing gears here. But it is still on the topic of truth, so I think it's kind of related. Like I said earlier, I didn't know if I'd be able to segue into this or not, but we're going to try, even if it's ham-handed. When it comes to the truth, remember this, that facts do not necessarily equal the truth. Now, that may sound like a contradiction because our language or the words that we use and the language that we use have been so twisted and turned around and corrupted. And words get used interchangeably, you know, and words get used interchangeably and their actual meanings don't even seem to matter anymore. People think that the truth equals facts, but that's not necessarily the case. Why is this important to remember? Because I'm going to tell you something that you need to always remember. The devil, now we know the devil and his children. What did Jesus say? The devil's a liar and a murderer from the beginning. There is no truth in him. No truth in him. Remember that line, no truth in him. And what did he say to his children? You speak the language of your father, because of course they're his children. They're of the devil. They speak his lingo. What he does, they do. Likewise, what we do should be, what Christ did should be more or less reflected in the way we live. He has no truth in him. Now, we know that no guile was found in the mouth of Christ. What that means, no untruth was found. No lies were found in Jesus' mouth. There were no lies in him. You see that polar opposite. The devil, there's no truth. But I'm going to tell you something. The devil will spit facts at you to confuse you. This is important because his children do the same. Oftentimes we talk about, you know, the devil will do this. But that doesn't mean you're going to have like a personal run-in with Satan himself. You know, you talk about the devil, you running in with his children, his minions on earth, those who serve him, those who speak his language. By their deeds, you will know them. That's the way you don't get tricked. It's all connected. Hopefully, our talk today is somewhat connected and coherent. The devil will spit facts at you, but he will not speak the truth. When Jesus went into the desert to be tempted, what did the devil do? He's sitting there spitting Bible verses. Anybody else would have been confused with that. Throw yourself off this building because the Bible says, the scripture says. And Jesus had that comeback of the truth. You see, he wasn't misquoting. He was quoting passages out of the scripture. But he wasn't speaking the truth. The liars will always lead you astray. These antichrists that you run into, they will spit facts at you, okay? Don't get that confused with the truth. Antichrists are going to have no truth in them, regardless of whether or not they spit something that seems nominally factual. What's the difference? You see, the truth leads you. Let me put this a different way. Facts can be used to lead you further away. Facts do not on their own lead you to the truth. In fact, facts can be used to deceive you. If you watch, listen to, or read any form of Western or especially U.S. media today, you can see that. They might tell you the fact. George Floyd died in the hands of the police while being taken into custody. Well, that's a fact. The truth is of a fentanyl overdose. But see, they leave that out. But there is a fact in there. Never listen to, read, or watch the U.S. media expecting the truth. Now, you can do those things and look for some facts in there. But don't think that they're leading you to the truth. You see, facts can be used to lead you in the opposite direction, to confuse you. And that's the difference. That's the difference from facts versus truth. When they had their January 6th hearings and they said all of these Trump supporters went into the Capitol. Now, that's a fact. No, you can't deny that. A lot of those people went in there. And then, of course, they create this narrative of to overthrow the government and lead an insurrection when they were just mostly walking around taking selfies. You see, they're using the fact that the people went in there to actually muddle the truth, to lead people further away from the truth. Again, this is important to understand because a lot of times people conflate these things and they'll get all confused and you get confused in your mind. That's what Satan wants. And again, that's not to say you're having a personal interaction with Satan himself. You're going to be dealing with one of his minions, and he doesn't like minions. You're surrounded by minions. They will try to muddle you with facts. They will try to convince you. They will sit there and spit facts at you and say, oh, yeah. Are you saying this didn't happen? Are you saying this didn't happen? Everybody knows this happened. Well, that may have happened. But what you're trying to do is lead, what they're trying to do is lead people away from the truth. This is the truth of the matter. The entire U.S. legal system, as I see it, the entire U.S. legal system is basically based on using facts. The prosecution uses facts to try to muddle the truth. That's not to say everybody that's sitting in a courtroom is innocent. I'm not naive or silly like that. But the entire, so people watch these TV shows, you know. They watch these TV shows. This is related. I'm sitting there, I pause for a minute because I'm thinking, I have to do this a lot. Does this have anything to do with what we're talking about? And I just sit there for a minute and contemplate it. And yes, I think it does. People watch these TV shows. Law and Order, Criminal Justice, or whatever the hell. And in these TV shows, you know, the prosecution has their guy. The police arrested this guy. It's this guy. Yet in the course of their investigation, the prosecution, the district attorney's office finds out there's some exonerating evidence. My gosh, this fellow was a good boy who did not do anything. And so they can bring him back in and they discuss it with him again. And they sit there and shake their heads and say, oh, my gosh. We almost prosecuted the wrong man. We have to start all over. Get the police back in here. We've got to start this investigation over from scratch. Let me tell you something. They don't do that. That ain't the way it works. Unless you're living in fantasy TV land, that ain't the way it works. They're going to hide that because all they care about is winning the court case. They don't give a shit about the truth. So what do? They're going to go in that courtroom and they're going to lay down their facts. This is a fact. Your cell phone pinged that you were in the area of the crime at the time. No. Were you in the area at the time? You always can tell that. Yeah, that's why I say the whole system is based on this. Legalese. It's raced around using the lingo of the devil. Bear with me. Whenever you see the court case, you hear about these court cases and they'll sit there and be like, it's a yes or no question because they don't want you telling the truth. They want you admitting to the facts. Were you or were you not in the area of the crime at the time it took place? Well, yeah, but it's a yes or no question. Well, yes. Thank you. Thank you. You were in the area of the crime. The entire system, because everything in pretty much in the Western world now is satanic in nature. The entire legal system is not based on getting to the truth. It's actually the prosecution is going to go in there and try to use whatever facts they can. They don't care about the truth. If the truth says they're wrong and they've got the wrong guy, this ain't Law and Order, whatever justice TV show you watched. They're going to cover that up. They're going to do everything they can to stack the facts to get their conviction so they can write that down as another win in their book. The truth has nothing to do. They will use those facts to make you look guilty as hell. Trust me, that is what they will do. You see it. You hear about somebody getting let loose from prison, you know? They've been in there for 20 years. And then, you know, somehow they get found out that they really didn't do it. Well, how did they get convicted? How did they get thrown in there in the first place? Anybody ever ask that? Whenever you see these news stories, oh my gosh, and the media, again, this is another example. They will use facts. They will sit there and tell you, this guy was put in prison and he didn't do the crime. He was in there for 20 years. and they try to lead you to the narrative is because racism. Because you see, when he was in court, everybody in there hated black people and said, let's get this guy off the street. There's one less we have to deal with. No, how did he get in there? Because when he went to court, the prosecutor stacked up a bunch of facts and created a narrative that it had to be this guy. And I'm going to tell you something. If you're poor, you can't afford a high dollar lawyer, it ain't going to matter if you white, black, brown, Chinese, whatever the hell. Because you're your public defender. He just wants to get out of there. You're getting paid like pennies on the dollar. He don't want to be messing with you. He's going to tell you to take the plea deal. The prosecution, that guy got in prison because the prosecution was able to stack up enough facts to make him look guilty. The truth was, he didn't do it. But see, they stack up facts. They stack up facts to make it look like, to see, lead the jury farther away from the truth. Again, why is that important? Because just, you have to understand that just as we follow the example, we should follow the example of Christ, Satan's children are going to follow the example of their father. Just as no lies were found in the mouth of Jesus, you're not going to find truth in the mouths and the intentions of Satan and his followers, these antichrists. You see, it all ties in. We were just talking recently about, you know, talking about how the Lord says, you know, by their deeds you will know them. Don't get all confused by their slick talking. Don't get all confused by what facts they might be trying to spit out to create this narrative to lead you further from the truth. By their deeds, you will know them. See, it's all interrelated. Don't be tricked. Don't get confused. And don't ever let them convince you that facts equal the truth, because they will use those facts to actually try to lead you further away from the truth. I hope this all kind of came together and made sense. In my mind, it did. But it is related, because, again, we always try to relate to the truth. We can always measure ourselves of how Christ-like am I in the way I'm going about this? And, again, if you can't set that aside and say, yeah, I need to do some improvement here, I need to do this a little differently, then probably going to need to work on sinful pride a little bit. Don't worry about it, because we're all here to work on some. That's why we're on this earth. We're on the purpose of being on this earth is to continue to improve ourselves. This is the womb of life. I've really come to view this life as simply being in the womb. Just as we were in our mother's womb and then we were birthed into this world, our life here on this world, this is just a big long 9 months. And we're going to, when we leave this life, that's when we're birthed into the real life, or the eternal death for some. We're in this life. This is just the womb of the real life. So while we're here, this is our purpose. You're never going to get 100% there. We're going to be growing. We're going to always be working on something up to the day we die. There's going to be stuff we could improve on. That's why we're here. Don't get discouraged. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of this exercise. We're going to get on out of here. Thank you for joining us this week. I hope you got something out of the entire show, especially, of course, always the Christian-specific part. This is the part that I think is the most important. All of it's fun. I always enjoy all of it. You know, I put my best foot forward in all of it. But the truth of the matter is, I do 100% believe the Christian-specific segment is the most important part. If I could only do one part or the other, that's the part I would do. That's the part I'm going to do. Anyway, regardless, I do thank you for joining this week. Thank you again for all of you. Archai, put a little bit in the offering plate. Goes a long way. It means a lot to me in more ways than one. And hopefully you get enough out of it that you'll be back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.